the way that the Sky Masters have ordered us to be. I fear that they will grow angry and return to destroy us all, destroy everything, as they did so long ago." With a certainty that he did not actually feel, Brad said, "No, they will not return. And if they do, my people will protect you." Minx stared at Brad. "The Sky Masters are very powerful." "So are we," Brad said, hoping that Minx's story was really mythology and not an actual threat. Reunion. Brad trudged back to his shuttlecraft, through the lengthening shadows of evening, mulling over the tale of fear and death that was troubling Minx. "They've disobeyed their so-called Sky Masters," he thought. "When presented with a way to survive the beasts from Beta, they allowed me to save them. When face to face with certain death, they chose life. Okay. But now Minx is afraid that he's broken some moral commandment, afraid that their supernatural overlords are going to return and punish them. How can I convince them that they're terrified of phantoms? And what happens if they're not phantoms? Mythology is based on reality at heart. How did this legend of the Sky Masters get started?" Then one overwhelming fact rose up in Brad's mind. How did these monsters from Beta develop the technology to fly here during the planet's closest approach? Those egg-shaped spacecraft aren't mythology, they're high technology. What happened to these people? What's going to happen to them? And to us? It was fully night by the time Brad reached the crippled shuttlecraft. In starlit darkness, he scrambled up the tree trunk that served as his ladder and ducked through the airlock's outer hatch. Turning to look out at the quietly peaceful night, he saw a point of light rising in the star-flecked sky. The starship, he realized. It's in orbit, only a few hundred kilometers away. Felicia's there. As he made his way through the inner airlock chamber and along the tilted passageway that led to his quarters, Brad also realized that Kossoff and Little John and all the others were aboard the starship, too. The whole chain of command, ready to look over his shoulder, ready to second-guess his decisions, ready to take control of his life. He went past his narrow sleeping chamber and straight to the cockpit. Sliding into the only chair there, he called, "MC, connect me with Felicia, please. Private and personal." Felicia's image took form in the holographic display. She was in their quarters, on the couch in their sitting room. "Waiting for me," Brad thought. "Hi," he said, feeling awkward and happy at the same time.
"Hello, Brad."
"You're here."
"Yes, we established orbit a few hours ago."
"I saw the ship overhead." Felicia smiled.
"Captain Desai told me he'll send a shuttle down to pick you up tomorrow morning."
"What time is it aboard the ship now?"
1900 hours, almost. We've adjusted ship's time to agree with your time on the ground. It's costing us 4 hours of sleep tonight."
"Sorry about that," he said, feeling slightly inane.
"It's all right," Felicia replied, the corners of her lips curving upward slightly. "Tomorrow we'll have a regular night. Full time. The two of us."
Brad could feel his own face breaking into a wide, cheery grin. "We sure will." MC woke Brad just as sunrise gleamed over the mountain ridgeline. "Captain Desai is coming in person to bring you back to Odysseus," the master computer announced. "Arrival in 2 hours." Snapping awake, Brad pushed himself to a sitting position on the bunk. Its sheet had somehow twisted itself around his body. As he disentangled himself, he recalled that he had dreamed while he slept, but it wasn't the old nightmare that had plagued him. He couldn't remember what his dream had been. The harder he tried to recall it, the more it melted out of his memory. Exactly 2 hours later, Brad stood at the foot of his improvised ladder and watched the shuttlecraft glide over the distant mountains, white contrails trailing off its wingtips. It flew down the length of the meadow, banked gracefully at its far end, then lowered its landing gear and came in for a flawlessly smooth landing. And 2 hours after that, approximately, Brad stood before Kossoff's desk. Little John sat in front of the desk, beaming up at Brad like a proud father. Kossoff's face, though, looked grimly unhappy.
"You look slimmer," Kossoff said.
"And Tana," added Little John, smiling.
You'd better get Yamagata to... Brad interrupted. I had a preliminary medical scan during the flight up here. Dr. Yamagata said I'm in good health. Kossoff humphed. You should get a complete physical exam. Yes, sir. I suppose you know you've made a shambles out of the mission protocol, Kossoff rumbled. Could we talk about that later, please? Brad said. I'd like to see my wife. Little John's eyes flicked to the office's side door. She's in the next room, waiting. Excuse me, Brad said, as he bolted toward the door. I'll make a full report to you tomorrow, first thing. Kossoff watched open-mouthed as Brad opened the door and rushed into Felicia's waiting arms. Little John chuckled lightly and turned back to Kossoff. The course of true love, he said. Kossoff tried to scowl but couldn't quite manage to pull it off. I'll schedule a meeting of the department heads for tomorrow morning, he grumbled. A broad grin splitting his dark face, Little John suggested, Better make it tomorrow afternoon. Give the lad a chance to recuperate before making his report. Brad awoke slowly, like a swimmer rising up to the surface of a deep pool. He saw that the bedroom was still dark, although the digital clock readout on the hollow viewer said 08:54. Turning slightly, he made out Felicia's tousled head on the pillow next to his. She was sleeping soundly. Brad tried to figure out how he could get out of bed without awaking her. I told Kossoff I'd make my report to him this morning, he remembered. But instead of getting out of bed, he lightly ran his hand along Felicia's back and across her bare rump. She popped one eye open. Time to get up, Brad said softly. Wrong, she contradicted. I gave MC orders to leave us alone until 10:00. But Kossoff, he can wait. And she wrapped an arm around Brad's neck and pulled him to her. Brad sighed contentedly. I guess you'll have to. When he finally got out of bed, Brad asked MC for any messages that had come through while he'd slept. There is only one, the computer's humanized image replied, from Professor Kossoff. The meeting of department heads to hear your personal report is scheduled for 1400 hours main conference room. Brad grinned at MC and replied, Please tell Professor Kossoff that I'll be there, and thank him for scheduling the meeting at a reasonable hour. After a long, luxurious hot shower and a breakfast of waffles slathered with oleomargarine and syrup, Brad tossed his bathrobe onto the thoroughly rumpled bed and pulled out of the closet a crisply pressed set of coveralls. First new set of clothes I put on in weeks, he said. You're thinner, Felicia said. Haven't had any real food down there. Just pills and prepackaged meals. She nodded. With a firm sense of purpose, she said, I'll take care of that. Brad hesitated, then told her, I'm going back there as soon as I can. I know. I'm going with you. I'll be part of the biology team. It's all arranged. With a grin, Brad replied, Fine. Wonderful. Report. Brad sat at the foot of the long conference table with Felicia beside him. He'd had to drag up a chair from the ones lining the conference room's far wall to make room for her at the table. No one objected. The table was filled by all the department heads, including Ursula Steiner, Felicia's boss. Even Captain Desai had come up for this meeting, sitting up at the left of the empty chair at the table's head. They were all chatting together, a dozen buzzing conversations up and down the table as they waited for Kossoff. Precisely at 1400 hours, the door to Kossoff's office opened, and the professor walked briskly to his seat. The smile on his bearded face looked a little forced, Brad thought, but as Kossoff sat down, he opened the meeting with, I know you've all been going over McDaniels' day-by-day reports. I thought it would be useful to hear what he has to say about his mission to the aliens, from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Someone stage whispered, a naysayer, no doubt. A few chuckles up and down the table. Brad rose slowly to his feet. The major impression that I got about the Gammons is that they are nonviolent, peaceable to the point of being suicidal. They allow themselves to be killed without offering any resistance, said Steiner. That's because they didn't see any way to save themselves, Brad pointed out. When I showed the villagers that the cats from Beta could be killed, they chose to save themselves. They chose, Kossoff corrected, to let you save them. Yes, said Brad. And now they're worried that they've done the wrong thing and they're going to be punished for their disobedience. What about the other villages? Asked Little John. Have any of them survived? Olaf Peterson, head of the planetology group, answered, Apparently not. They all seem to have been wiped out by the cats.
And the cats have themselves died off?
Steiner said, Yes. It's as if they've been genetically programmed to die after a few days from breaking out of their eggs.
Wait a minute, Brad said.
Each village has a rememberer, a person who is supposed to survive the death time and educate the new generation of gamins once they come out of the ground.
But that won't happen until their long winter is over, said Elizabeth Chang.
You mean that one person in each village hibernates through the winter?
Apparently so, Brad admitted. The rememberer in the village I contacted was killed by the cats. The table went silent. Then Peterson, pale and gloomy, said,
Do we have to search those other villages for survivors?
It looks that way, said Little John.
Brad said, Wait, there's something else. According to the Gamins' mythology, their civilization once built extensive cities, but they were wiped out by the Sky Masters, whoever they were.
Mythology, Little John pointed out. You can't expect us to try to track down fantasies, Brad.
Mythologies have their roots in reality.
Yes, but... Kossoff broke into the discussion.
Olaf, have the surveillance satellites detected anything that might have once been a city?
Peterson shook his head. Most of the planet is too heavily forested for ground-penetrating radar to get decent imagery. Quentin Abbott spoke up.
Mythology or reality, one thing is abundantly clear. This planetary system suffered a major upheaval some 100,000 years ago, perhaps more. The current configuration of the inner planetary orbits is unstable. Alpha is going to be swallowed up by Mithra within another millennium or so. Beta and Gamma are going to be ejected from the Mithra system altogether.
Kossoff said, Surely you don't believe that these mythological Sky Masters did this? Shattered the entire planetary system?
Why?
How? With a grim smile of utter certainty, Abbott said,
I offer one irrefutable item of evidence. Those egg things that the cats ride in from Beta to Gamma can't be natural. That's high technology, people, and we should be trying to determine who created such technology and why.
Evidence. From his seat at the foot of the table, Brad said, We have the remains of the eggs that the cats rode in from Beta. That should tell us something.
Indeed, said Kossoff.
Desai suggested, And maybe a ground team could find evidence of the city or cities that the Gamins spoke of.
Well, that's probably mythology, said Little John.
I could ask the Gamins about it, Brad said. Maybe they can point us in the right direction.
Kossoff objected, The ground team is going to have its hands full building a new village for the newborn Gamins.
Are they going to have to stay through the winter? Steiner asked.
No, that's much too long.
We're scheduled to return back to Earth in slightly less than 4 years. Their winter lasts 10 times that long.
So we'll build their new village and then leave?
Before anyone else could reply, Brad said, I think we should introduce them to some of our technology. Help them get through the winter without hibernating, at least.
Kossoff scowled down the table.
Haven't we interfered with their way of life enough?
We're not here to... Brad interrupted.
We're here to help these people. We can't just leave them to face the winter on their own.
Not now that you've destroyed their way of life, Kossoff growled.
Little John spread his hands as if to part the two of them.
You're both right. It would have been criminal to let the aliens be killed off. I can understand where Brad felt he had to help them. Now the question is, how much help should we give them?